All right, hi everyone. My name is Will Marshall. I'm a committer and contributor to Apache Edgent. Glad to see that we have a nice little crowd here. Edgent has been incubating at the Apache Software Foundation for about the last year, but the name was changed about 8 months ago from Quarks. So if you know it better as Quarks, it is now Edgent. Just to give a quick overview of this talk, I'm going to give a high-level intro to data streaming. If you're not familiar, talk about how Edgent sort of fits into that universe, how it's positioned, and walk through a couple code examples, and then Dale will take it over with a video analytics demo running on the Raspberry Pi. If we have time for any questions, then we can take those after. So what is data streaming? I find that data streaming is best described as the way in which data is consumed from devices which might run forever. For example, a temperature sensor that takes temperature readings might not turn off. It just goes until it breaks. And as such, you can't wait until all the data is there to process it. You just have to process it as soon as it enters the system continuously. So any framework which writes such an application has to be written with that principle in mind. So to take an example of this, that connected temperature sensor I just sort of mentioned, you might want to do something with that data. If you're reading temperature values from an engine, there might be a variability in the data such that you might want to perform a moving average to reduce that variability. That's a very common streaming operation. Also, if the moving average goes above a certain value, you want to perform some kind of action, some kind of trigger. And so this is a very, very typical problem in streaming, especially seen on edge devices. The way that this would be implemented using many current streaming frameworks is that you'd have a few edge devices. You might have the GPS device on a smartphone. You might have the temperature sensor, the fluid intake temperature of your car, or the humidity sensor in your house, all of this data. And the data is usually pushed to a cluster where analysis happens, either with Spark or Apex or Kafka. The issue with this model is that if you're sending all the data to a cluster over the network, it can be prohibitively expensive. And this can happen in terms of actual money. You're paying for every kilobyte that you send. And moreover, if you're doing something like connection pooling, you can run into bandwidth caps very quickly. And so that's one issue. But additionally, if the backend cluster determines that there is some action which needs to be taken, then the action incurs round trip latency. The information has to flow to the cluster, the analysis happens, and then the action gets sent out to the edge device. So that's might be unacceptable for certain applications. And the takeaway from this is that for edge devices, for small things like Raspberry Pis or phones, things that run on some constrained computing platform, not in a cluster, you want to send less information. You only want to send information which is interesting. For example, if you know that the standard operating temperature of an engine is between 70 and 90 degrees Celsius, then maybe your application doesn't have to send all of that over the network. It might stand to ignore it and save on the network costs. And as such, there needs to be certain computation done on the device. There needs to be a streaming framework to do streaming operations on the edge. And this is how Edgent is positioned. It is a community for accelerating edge analytics. It has a programming SDK for defining flows and applications in Java. And we chose Java because we thought it was a good compromise between the actual performance of the runtime, but also the ability to develop quickly and iterate quickly. Also, if a platform supports a JVM, it also likely can run Edgent. So we have good cross-platform support in that regard. Edgent is modular. in the sense that its runtime and some of its functionality is composed of a number of jar files. For example, if you're running an application on a phone and you're communicating through MQTT, so you don't need a Kafka connector, you can leave that jar file out. And for spatially constrained devices, this can be very beneficial. Additionally, it's extensible. We wrote the runtime in mind with the idea that somebody might need to take our runtime and modify it to suit their purposes if what we currently have isn't right for their application. And so in theory, if you need to take our code and extend our interfaces and change it, that should hopefully happen relatively easily. The ultimate goal of a streaming framework of its API is to create a topology. This is a number of data operations which are linked to each other. For example, here we have three different kinds of data operations. We have sources, maps, and syncs. A source is an operation, for example, reading from a file such that it produces tuples in the system. It produces data items in the systems. A map operation takes a tuple and produces either zero or one tuples of a different kind. And lastly, by process of elimination, a sync takes tuples and might communicate with an external system. It doesn't have to be writing to a file. This could be sending it to a backend through through REST or a WebSocket or MQTT or something like that. So this is the image in mind when I think streaming framework. What are we creating? And the way this is accomplished in Edgent is that we have a number of functions. We have suppliers, predicates, functions, and consumers. These are used to, for example, a supplier. When its get method is called, it produces a tuple, and depending on how you implement it, it can perform some action which ingests data into the system. A predicate is something which can be used to filter tuples. Like I mentioned, if something is deemed uninteresting, it doesn't have to be sent for subsequent processing. And functions and consumers are for maps and syncing, like I mentioned. The topology object is something which is a wrapper for your application. It keeps track of everything. It sort of encapsulates that topology, like it's named. And a T-stream is the primary abstraction in an Edgent application. It represents the unbounded flow of data, like I mentioned, from sources which might not terminate. You'll notice that it's templated just generically. So the data that can flow through a T-stream is any Java object. It doesn't have to be serializable like in other applications. And you can perform many operations on a T-stream. I won't go into all of them here, but you can refer to them. And lastly, a T-window. So this is something you might use to perform a moving average. It performs an aggregate operation on a pool of data, such that if you want to calculate the sum, or like I mentioned, the average, or any operation on, say, the last 10 minutes of data. This is something that we wrote because it's a common pattern, and developers shouldn't have to write that kind of boilerplate themselves if they are have a streaming application. There are a number of connectors that are supported by Edgent. I mentioned a few of them, MQTT and Kafka, but also we support Watson IoT Hub, which is great because it's a device registry. It allows you to keep track of devices, and it supports MQTT. But also JDBC, files, HTTP, WebSockets, and many more. If you are writing an Edgent application and you there's a connection that you need but we don't have, maybe for some kind of serial bus or something, feel free to contribute it because there are many different ways that communication can flow in and out of the system. There are a number of analytics that we have exposed in our API for convenience. There's certain kinds of filtering you can do if you want something within a certain time window or not in a time window, between two values or not between two values, but also just simple things that you don't want to have to write all the time in Java, like min, max, sum, mean for moving average, But these are very simple analytics, but they can be quite convenient. If there are analytics that you find yourself using over and over again, please contribute those as well if we do not have them. So this is, I'm going to walk you through a sample agent application. And this is sort of a step beyond Hello World. It does a number of things. But in a nutshell, it reads from a temperature sensor. It converts the value to JSON. And then it sends it over MQTT to Watson IoT platform. I think I mentioned Watson IoT is its device, keeps track of devices and assigns them unique IDs and such. So you can imagine this application running on like a remote temperature device somewhere, such as Raspberry Pi. The first thing which happens when you write an agent application is you create a provider. A provider can be thought of as the container in which jobs are run. It is the, here we have a direct provider, meaning that when this application is executed, it will run in the same JVM as process which created this the graph, so it doesn't create another JVM. A provider can be used to create a topology. This is your application. This is what you use to define your data sources, to create T-streams, to read from real-time sources of data, it is your application. The topology can be used to create a device. Now, this represents a connection to your backend. So I mentioned Watson IoT before. Here it's communicating through MQTT. I'm using a quick start Watson IoT device, meaning that it communicates with a public server, which is has some nice graphing functionality I will show you in a second. So the device represents a connection to a backend. The topology has this nice poll method, and this allows you to call a supplier every n seconds periodically, such that if you want to just grab temperature readings from a temperature sensor every second, you can do so more or less frequently as needed. The poll method creates a T-stream. Here it's templated to doubles. And this is somewhat self-explanatory. I've mentioned that this can be Java objects of any type. I left this part out just for simplicity in the visualization, which will happen. But here you could do some data reduction. You take the readings filter and you can say, okay, I only want values which are outside of 70 and 120 degrees Celsius. So it's one line of code to do that kind of filtering on the unbounded stream of tuples coming into the system. But I commented that out. So the next line is we have this reading stream of temperature readings, and we want to convert it to JSON. The backend requires JSON, and as such, we need to wrap them in JSON objects. And here we have this value of number wrapper function, which it will take the double and it will simply wrap it in a JSON object with the key temp. And you'll notice that the T-stream which is produced is of JSON objects. So type conversions can be done using this map function. And then we send it to the backend using the events method. It'll send it to Watson IoT and we can view the data. Also, multiple operations can be performed on a single T-stream. Here we can not only send the data to the backend, but we can also print it to standard output. In theory, we could write it to a file for logging on the device if that's what you want. And we have now built our application, and we can submit it using the provider, which I mentioned that this is a direct provider, so it will run in the current JVM. But rather than just say how this could work in theory, I actually have this code right here. So here, it's in Eclipse. It's exactly the same thing as you just saw. It reads from a temperature sensor, converts it to JSON, and sends it to a backend. And what it looks like when we run this is, it spits a bunch of red text you can't see. It connects to Watson IoT. The device is registered. Here, this is the device ID, and you can see that it is reading temperature values and printing it to the screen. And I mentioned we're sending it to Watson IoT. It has this nice graphing functionality, and you, so you can see the sort of flow of operations happening in however many lines of code. So a lot was happening for the lines of code which were present. But so that's interesting application. But more interesting is video analytics, because this runs on the Raspberry Pi, and the Raspberry Pi has the ability to interface with many devices. We thought that video analytics would be a good demo. So Dale can show you an actual working example of this.
Let's see here. I think we're going to have to switch that. Oh, did it switch to HDMI? We just need to switch at the projector, I think, is what I had to do last time. So.
That's a miracle.
You always wonder. An hour ago, it wasn't working, believe me. okay. So, hi. Sorry for the delay. I'm Dale LeBossier. I'm also a committer on the Apache Edgent project. And so I'm thankful that ApacheCon happened, because Will and I collaborated on this probably for over a year. This is the first time I've met him. he's on the West Coast. I'm on the East Coast. So anyway, video analytics at the edge seemed like doing that would create a system that had a lot of interesting properties that might have a lot of applications. And Jerome Chaillot, which was the third name that was on the title sheet, he and myself decided that it would be nice to try and build a demo system like this, and then be able to, the code's going to be up on GitHub and all, and maybe that would jumpstart other people's applications trying to utilize some of this. And Jerome is a colleague who's an IoT field specialist in France, and I have never met him either. So anyway, the idea was we wanted to take a system that looked like, my little homegrown sketches here, a system that had the shape of the above system, and instead create a system that looked like the one on the bottom. So on the top, the characteristics are we had system would be a bunch of cameras with raw video feeds going into some processing system that would be doing face detection and then face recognition, and as a front end to some broader application. And so by face detection, we mean sort of general face detection. It's not any specific individuals. And by face recognition, that would be performing recognition for looking for specific objects. So the face recognition involves training a model and then applying that model against these detected images to then see if it can detect specific individuals. So that system has, you know, sort of some undesirable characteristics that Will was alluding to earlier, which is, you know, just constant raw video feeds, lots of data into a system and such. So the system on the bottom, you know, we had this desire for this smart camera IoT device, and we wanted to migrate the face detection processing to the camera. And the camera would connect to a public cloud, to an IoT device hub, where it could publish events that happened, these face detection events, and could receive control commands to adapt its behavior. And up in the cloud, we have other analytics would be running, such as the face recognition, again, all front-ending some larger sort of application. So more specifically, what we built for this demonstration system was, you know, our smart camera consists of a Raspberry Pi and using Edgent, of course, and OpenCV, which is a open source computer vision library and very popular, which is written in C or C++, I don't remember which, but conveniently you can compile it and it'll generate a bunch of Java wrappers for the API. So it's easy for us to create a Java-based application to leverage it. And again, so the face detection processing will be happening on the Pi. And in the demo that I'll show you, so there'll be a window. All the slides, by the way, were uploaded, so if you, you know, anyway, they should be available. So there'll be a window that'll be showing the camera frames as they're grabbed and the results of the face detection processing. It'll be highlighting the regions of any place in the image that is a detected face. And so our device is going to connect up to a public cloud, and what we're using here is just IBM Bluemix and this Watson IoT platform that Will mentioned earlier. So, you know, Watson IoT platform is this, you know, industrial strength IoT device hub that has registration capabilities and things like that for devices, and it's secure and scalable and all. One thing which I'll, so this system that we built here, actually for the Edgent side, there's really nothing, there's one line of code that's specific to connecting to Watson IoT platform, which is utilizing, creating an instance of a connector to Watson IoT platform. But we've also got a connector, a device connector, to say just a basic MQTT server. So it's not like it's wedded to this stuff on the right-hand side. And let's see. So again, and we, you know, once up in the public cloud, we'd use a streaming analytics service, which there's an IBM Streams streaming and streaming application development environment where face recognition would be performed, and again, front-ending, who knows, whatever else. Because, you know, once you're up in the cloud here, you've got a ton of services and APIs that you can leverage, you know, for mobile, for dashboards, for you name it. But we're really not going to talk anything about the cloud side today, because this is an Edgent talk. And so what we've got here, we've got two other simple applications that are connecting to the IoT hub. One that allows us to send device commands to control the behavior of it, and another that's going to sit there and listen for face detection events. And then for face detection events, it'll just render the image that was with the face detection event. So I should say that, you know, so if no faces are being detected, there's no data is flowing up into the hub. And then if faces are detected, we chose to not send the entire frame. We're just sending the image of the frame, which represents the detected face. So, you know, there's a dramatic reduction in the amount of data that's being sent. And for the commands that we built right now, we have the ability to start and stop this face detection processing in aggregate. And we have the ability to change the frame rate that the application is polling the camera for frames and such. And you can imagine other commands like, you know, zoom or panning a camera. You can imagine that the device might get augmented, sort of automatically do pan and zoom once you want to make it a little more smarter. So when we showed this to, you know, give you an idea of like one application perhaps, so a colleague of ours, we were, you know, describing this, and they said, this would make this wonderful, you know, system for AMBER alerts. So AMBER alerts have to do with helping to find missing or abducted children. And, you know, so they thought that, you know, having these sort of pool of cameras out there, you know, you might be able to detect faces, might even be able to, should be able to improve this, smarten the device a little bit more, and even do limited forms of face recognition on it. You know, it's limited resources, so you can't have a big honking model that's been trained for lots of faces, but it's probably practical. We haven't gotten to implement it yet, but we expect it'll be practical to download a trained model for a couple phases, and then that would work. So here's here's a picture of our smart camera, and so now let's see about. Alrighty, more commands. Yeah. Oh, I just wanted to mention. So one of the reasons why we also use this Watson IoT platform is that you can create a free subscription, which is what I did for developing all of this. And so that was kind of nice. It was easy and didn't have to pay anything for it. So the first thing you're going to do here is start up this event subscriber, which will be, and so the event subscriber, we had to just give it a configuration file that told it how to connect to the IoT hub. And so again, this is sort of this part of the system here. Now, if all has gone well, connect to the Pi. And so I should just say, so like this IoT hub, I don't know, it's running somewhere in Texas, but the the client is connected to it and it's sitting there happy. So now I want to start up the application for the smart camera. And I'm going to, we have a couple variants of it. One of them uses the direct provider that Will described earlier, but this version uses another provider called the IoT provider, and the IoT provider comes with some additional services and things like that that make it really easy for an application developer to sort of automatically get this start and stop application and a way to send it device commands that are automatically operated on. So we'll tell it to start at 3 frames per second. And we're going to tell it to, when it starts, when the provider starts, the application starts, we don't actually want it to start the face detection processing. We want the provider to just come up, and it'll be sit there listening for device commands. So we'll have to send it a device command in order to get it going. And we need to give it a configuration file to tell it how to connect to the IoT hub. And so this is the window. I guess I typed a argument incorrectly here. Let me kill this. Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. So let's start it. Okay, so this is the where the camera frames are going to get rendered, and right, it's blank because I just told you that. We told it not to start up that. So the next thing we want to do, and so that's connected to the hub also. So next thing we want to do back on my Mac is send it a command to start the application. All right. So let's see here. So you can see it's working set here. So what just happened, right, was that this control application sent a device command up to the IoT hub. The application was sitting there camped out listening for this particular kind of device command, and it built the application, the topology, and then submitted it for execution. So it's running, it's grabbing camera frames at 3 frames a second, and it's doing its thing. So, as I said, we implemented a couple commands. Oops. Yeah, stop. So we can stop this. We send it a stop command, and it's not doing anything right now. But this IoT provider, the application's still out there running, but it's the face detect application isn't running. So we start it back up again, And okay, good, it's running. So now I'm going to reorient the camera a little bit, and so it does some face detection, and it's going to, in doing that, you know, you should see the highlighted region in the left-hand frame, and then as the events are sent to the IoT hub, this subscriber should receive them and hopefully start rendering them. So, see, oh, okay, so it's you know, it's tracking. It's sort of slow and jittery. It's at 3 frames a second and all. But it's doing it, right? So yay, the demo gods have been happy today. So the other command that I had mentioned, you know, is to set the change the frame rate. Oh, I know what I want to do. I'm going to go back to the commands briefly because in nerves, you sort of forget what you're doing here. So I wanted to give you a sense of what one of these device commands might be. So the device commands have identifiers, and so this IoT provider has a certain class of commands called agent control built into it. And the payload for that command is a JSON object. And what that JSON object represents is a method invocation on a control beam that has been registered with the provider. So here, the control is a, go back up here. This was the start application. So here, the control bean is this, control is for this app service. And the particular instance that we want to invoke this method on is one that has an alias of agent. And we want to invoke the submit method, and it takes two arguments. One is the name of the application that we want to submit, and the other is a optional set of configuration parameters for that. And then for the stop, you know, that this is just another control bean invocation. So in this case, it was a job control bean, and that job control bean, the one that we cared about, was one called face detect, and we wanted to invoke the state change method. We sent it a command to close, which means stop the topology. And again, so and this last one was just the command that, whoops, that was the submit again. The last one was just a command for changing the poll period, right? So those are all things, as a, you know, take a quick look at the code, these are all things that are kind of like built into the IoT provider. The application didn't really have to basically write any code at all in order to support this. The good news is that applications can pretty easily create their own controls. And if they create their own control, then they can do method invocations, they can send device commands or method invocations on their controls as well. And the system isn't just limited to, you know, agent control device commands. Applications can develop their own commands, and again, with another, like a line of code, they can subscribe to those device commands and then create a stream of those command invocation, the received commands, and operate on them. So, oh yeah, so as you can see, so, you know, this at 10 frames per second, you know, it's obviously it's a lot smoother. It's doing its thing and all. So I'm just going to stop that again. And if there aren't any really burning questions, I'm just going to go over to the code quickly to try and give you a sense of what that was all about. excuse me. So let me skip, actually, before I look at this part here. So I mentioned we have two versions of the application. One is using the direct provider, one's using this IoT provider. This is the code related to, let's see, is that all legible? Should I make it bigger? No, good. So this is a version that uses the direct provider, and this has the same pattern that you saw in Will's example. You know, you create a direct provider instance, you create a connector, this IoT device interface, which is to this connector, and again, it could be a connector either to Watson IoTP, it could be a connector to just an MQTT broker. If we have a connector for Kafka, but we don't have this IoT device model fronting that for Kafka, but it'd be a pretty easy thing to add If that was something, you know, somebody said, "Hey, you know, I want to connect to Kafka using this device model. Can you help me out?" That'd probably be something that would get answered pretty quickly. So the code between these two is identical, other than these two highlighted regions. Everything else related to the camera processing, the topology itself, and all is identical. So with the IoT provider, things are a little different though, because the IoT provider has these other services. It needs to kind of, you know, you have to initialize it a little differently so that it can do things like build your application for you when it's told to build your topology. So when you, there's just a couple lines of code here for initialization. You create a new instance of the IoT provider, it takes an argument, which is a function, and that function we supply, and when the IoT provider is started, it'll call that function that says, "Hey, give me a connector to the IoT device, to the IoT hub." And the next thing that we'll do is we have to register these applications that we want to support being automatically started by device commands and stopped and such. So here is the registration of this face detect application, topology. So you can have unlimited number of topologies in a single provider instance. We just have one here, but you could have, you know, however many you need, and they're each independently controllable and such. And this register topology method takes another function, which it will call in response to a start or a submit command to build the topology. And then once the topology is built, the IoT provider will submit it for execution, as we saw. And finally, this is, you know, we start the provider. So this was sort of the portion of the flow that you saw in the first part of the beginning of the demo, where we just started the application. It's up there running, but it's not actually processing any camera frames or anything like that. So if we look at what this topology is, basically what's going on here is, you know, we're pulling a camera frame, we're filtering out empty frames, we're going to perform face detection on that frame, we're going to display the results of that face detection, and then publish those results as device events. And so that's what's going on right down here. And so here we've got this poll method on a topology that Will talked about earlier. And so it's calling this function that we supply at whatever rate. In this case, when I did the demo, I started off and said 3 frames per second. We created a little, you know, class, this camera class, and all it does is abstracts around a couple of OpenCV objects. But the interesting thing here is, right, it's, you know, you grab the method's just called grab frame. The only thing it does is it reads from the camera from OpenCV, and it returns an OpenCV mat object, a matrix object, which is basically a frame buffer. So the result of this poll operation is now we have a T stream of these mat objects of camera frames. And the next thing we do is we're going to give that stream an alias. And by giving it an alias, this is what made it the agent will automatically, when this topology is running, it registers one of these control beans, a period control bean. And that control is what gave us the ability to dynamically change the poll rate from a device command. I guess I should say, so the API, the style of use of this is you see a lot of use of Lambda, Java 8 Lambda functions, and you also see the API supports this fluent style of programming of use. So, you know, Lambda expressions and the fluent API sort of, it just, right, you, it gets rid of a lot of noise. You don't have to create some objects yourself just to define a function, and you don't have all these intermediate variables necessarily in order to create a pipeline of operations and connect these streams together. So then we perform the map operation, which says we've got this input, which is a raw camera frame, So for every tuple on the stream, you know, the runtime, this topology, it's going to call this function that says, okay, here's a raw camera frame as input, perform this face detection processing, and generate a faces data object as output. So this face detector class, again, a pretty simple class. I'm really not going to talk about it at all today because it's, you know, not really about OpenCV, but this is the image processing pipeline that that method's doing. So it takes a raw camera frame, it resizes it, converts it to grayscale, runs the face detection processing on it, and then extracts the image from that frame for those extracted from those detected faces. And you know, each one of these little items here is like it's like a couple, three, four lines of code, you know, invoking some OpenCV methods. So it's not an awful lot of code there. I can guarantee that it's probably not optimal. I didn't know anything about OpenCV when I started this, and now I know next to nothing about OpenCV. But was able to get this all plugged together and working. So then, now that we've got this T-stream of faces data objects that represent the face detections, we just give it the peak method on a stream, and that's for each tuple there, we're going to render the images in that window that we saw. And finally, we're going to publish that stream as device events. And that's not too complicated. There's basically two pieces to this. One is we're transforming this T stream of faces data into a T stream of JSON objects. And the faces data could have zero or one or more detected faces in it. And what we wanted to do is create a JSON object for each face that was detected. So here, you know, we're leveraging this flat map operation and doing that transformation. So for each one of the faces inside of that faces detected, faces data object, we're just iterating over it and converting it to a JSON object. And so JSON can't hold binary data. So what we chose to do was to take that small region and convert it to MIME encoding. And now that we've got this stream of JSON objects, we just give it to the connector. As you saw, as Will had the same thing in his. It says, here's this stream, publish each one of those to a event called Faces, and publish it with this quality of service and all. So to just kind of recap quickly, I mean, there's not a lot of code here. Yeah, you got to learn what it's all about, but once you understand it, it's actually pretty easy to compose these applications and build these topologies. And again, I didn't write anything specific in this application to support the submit command other than the way I told it to register my topology builder. And I didn't tell it, you know, anything about, I didn't have to write code to actually respond to a device change poll command or not, but anyway, sorry, I'm babbling. And then we just had this code for constructing our topology and a small amount of code for actually going to the, publishing it to the device, to the IoT hub. So, whoops, back here. Okay, settle down. So basically, you know, that sort of concludes what we wanted to share with you. And just to wrap that up, you know, right? So Will went over this introduction, hopefully sort of clarified what Edgent is and why you might want it. And hopefully this video analytics sort of system, you know, sort of made it seem a little more real and interesting. And you'll be able to get the code there at this URL. I haven't published it yet, but it'll either go up today or tomorrow or something like that. And you know, hopefully we sort of convinced you that maybe Edgent is something that you might find interesting. And join the community. We'd absolutely love to have more contributors, more people using it. think we're actually looking for a new mentor because somebody retired. Well, they're still participating, but maybe they don't want to really participate a lot. So if there's, you know, if you have any interest in Edgent or contributing anything, you know, hook up with myself or Will afterwards, or, you know, and we'll be glad to chat with you. I want to mention that we submitted a session for Birds of Feather tomorrow night. See if there's people interested. We'd love to hear other people's ideas, and or we could clarify more things. Will's doing a Shark Tank presentation, and what else? There was one other thing.
Lightning talk.
And a lightning talk. So yeah, we're here because we're trying to, you know, increase some enthusiasm for all of this, and hope you found the talk helpful and enlightening. So I don't even know how we're doing. Oh wow, talk. 5 minutes, I told you, 5 minutes, wow. It never works out. Any questions? Yes?
Yeah, so quick question. Are you guys familiar with what used to be known as Project Fuse? Now it's known as AJAX Foundry out of Linux Foundation.
No, I'm not.
Please repeat the question for the recorder.
Okay. So are we familiar with Apache Fuse?
No, Project Fuse.
Project Fuse, excuse me, which, and I'm not. I don't know. Will
I'm not. No.
So let's shut up for this. And quick technical question. So is it possible to actually map the topology to different devices? So suppose I have a complicated topology and I want, you know, different elements in that topology to actually go on different devices.
So the question is, can I create a distributed application with topologies running either in separate processes, maybe on separate devices, communicating with each other? And yes, we don't have anything, though, that really makes that. There's nothing to preclude that, but we don't have, you know, right now the focus has really been on sort of single device talking to the hub, and even single process on that device. But, you know, we have these sort of pub-sub models for connecting streams and topologies together, and it would just be, you know, a matter of creating that pub-sub, that cross-span boundaries. Or today, actually, you could do it today if you wanted to communicate via an MQTT broker, for example. You could do that. So, yes?
What's the smallest device you've tried on the Edge and Bond?
A Raspberry Pi.
You've not gone down to the microcontroller?
No. Oh, so the question is, what's the smallest device that we've tried it on? No, microcontroller, no. So, you know, it runs on a JVM. I don't know, are there many microcontroller environments that support a JVM?
There are some.
Yeah. And I wish I could give you some sizing information, but like I can't, because I just haven't been able to, have the time to sort of get that. But, microcontrollers. Seemed like there was something else I was going to say, but now I'm blanking. Sorry. Something else? So there, you know, again, contributions. So, like, there's been some questions about, Swift as an API as opposed to Java, or maybe C++ or something. Oh, I know, the point I was going to make about the microcontrollers was, I mean, the value in Edgent is sort of to maybe help build these smarter devices that, at least from my perspective, they might be trying to do some analytic processing that, you know, is sort of more heavyweight, and so I don't know if in general that's something that's amenable to a sort of a microcontroller environment as opposed to something a little bit larger. And it's not just an IoT device, so you could run Edgent on an IoT gateway. So you might have a lot of maybe more microcontroller devices connected to that gateway, and you might be running more analytics in the gateway itself, and then the gateway would connect with the hub.
Sure. One point on that. So ultimately, the decision for what language to support should come from the community. And so Edgent does run on a JVM, but if it should run on something more amenable to microcontrollers, or maybe it should run on Swift, or maybe it should use a different language, that should come from the community. So if you see that you like the architecture and sort of the style, but it's not in the language that you like, please post on the mailing list. We're very happy to have that conversation.
Yeah. Always adding more is good, so whatever makes you happy. sounds like we're done. Thanks.